This is Counterculture with Marie Buskey, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. on Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie. Joining me now, I welcome back from Great Britain, Anne-Marie Waters, just a spokesman for UKIP. And we were going to catch up just after the election. I'm glad that we actually deferred a little bit because, man, Anne-Marie, stuff's been going down.
I for the first time in 20 years that I've been involved in politics, I'm genuinely watching what I say. I'm genuinely going to watch what I say. Because I'll tell you what, there was a time when I would have, but those days are long gone. I am not going to jail for this. I am not going to jail for this. This country is a four-letter word show. And I hope you know what I mean by that. I'm staggered. I have thought, like many people I know, shall I just get out of the UK? Is a thought that I've had several times in the last few weeks. But it's not that easy. First of all, where'd you go? Continental Europe is slightly better, but only slightly. Where'd you go? Where'd you go? If I was to leave, I'd have to sell my house. I'd have to worry about it. I've got pets. Where do I go? So there's nowhere to go, even if you do. So I am genuinely in the position. I have, in the last couple of weeks, I've tweeted a few times and then deleted it. And I've never done that before. Because you tweet something and you think, oh, hold on. Are the police going to
my door? They come knocking at my door.
And then delete it. Because it has happened to me before. And this is before we turned into Ingsoc from 1984. I tweeted, this is going back 10 years easily. I tweeted something. Do you remember Geert Wilders' video, Fitna? You're familiar with it. You know Fitna.
Yeah.
He took bits from the Quran and sort of over terrorist attacks and things. I tweeted that. Again, like I say, we're going back 10 years. And within the hour, the police knocked on my door to tell me to delete that tweet. Now, so it's not impossible. And this is, like I say, this is before we got to this point. So I have tweeted a few things in the last few weeks and then just thought, and deleted it immediately. So that's where we are. I'm genuinely cautious. I'm sitting here and I'm talking to you and I'm thinking, what can I say and what can I not say? And it's amazing how quickly we have adapted to that.
I've been thinking about you, and I wondered whether or not you would get yourself a T-shirt, and all it said was, I told you so. Do you think you could get away with that without getting the constabulary at your door?
I told you so?
I told you so. Because, I mean, so just for our listeners that aren't aware, give us a sort of a background, because you have been tolling the bell on the warning of mass immigration from immigrants that don't share the same values for, as we said, a very long time. So just give us sort of a brief potted run-up of some of the things that you've done to just say, hey, hold on a minute, we need to think about this. And then we will continue, just to give some context to it for our listeners.
It's a long story. It started when I was a law student, again, a long, long time ago, and I discovered the existence of Sharia courts. They're unofficial. They're not backed by the law of the land, but they don't have to be. And they are illegally operating. But having said that, I mean, they're not legal, but they operate in the open and nothing happens. Nobody stops them. They do things like marry little children to older men. They handle divorce, domestic violence cases, which are criminal offence. So dealing with them in private court is also a criminal offence. And I happen to believe, and I believe one day I'll be proven right, because when I said they were marrying underage girls against their will in the Sharia courts, people didn't believe me. And then as the years went on, newspapers started publishing stories about young girls being forcefully married in these Sharia courts. So I was proven right about that. Let me tell you something else I'll be proven right about. Sharia courts in the UK are passing death sentences. Those killings are being carried out, and they are what we call honour killings. I guarantee you that these are being passed in Sharia courts in this country. So when I found out about the existence of them, I started to get involved in campaigning against them. That led me into Rabbit Hole Central. I read the Quran, I studied the Hadith, I started to learn Islam more and more and more and more and more. And the more I learned, the more horrified I was. And I started politically campaigning. I even started my own political party. I said at the beginning I would give it 5 years. If it wasn't working, I would stop after 5 years. I did exactly that. After 5 years, we were, it is extraordinary what happens. I'll give you an example. I've stood for election dozens of times. In the town I live in, I stood just for the local council. Spent weeks and weeks and weeks, had all these wonderful policies, spent weeks and weeks and weeks campaigning. The weekend before the election, Hope Not Hate. Are you familiar with Hope Not Hate? This is a far left group registered as a charity. It put out a leaflet, matter-of-factly describing me as the British National Party, which doesn't have a great reputation. So this was a lie. I've never had any involvement with the British National, ever, ever, ever. So I went to the Electoral Commission, which oversees elections. This was an official leaflet, a leaflet at election time with a lie in it. The Electoral Commission told me it was freedom of speech. Can you believe that? I'm not allowed to talk about Islam, but lying in an election leaflet during a formal election period is freedom of speech. If it had been the other way around, it wouldn't have been freedom of speech. So this is the kind of stuff we face all the time. So I thought, right, look, I'm leaving politics alone. The country is just not voting. And political options aren't working. People are just not voting. And it's not that they're voting against us, they're not voting at all.
Mm.
I've written a couple of books. I wrote Beyond Terror, Islam's Slow Erosion of Western Democracy, which with that book, I wanted to show people, because we always spoke about Islam in terms of terror attacks. And to me, terror attacks are actually the least of our problems where Islam is concerned. It's how they're shaping our culture. That's the problem. They're getting rid of free speech. I mean, look at us. We're deleting tweets. That's the rape gangs. I spent a year and a half investigating rape gangs around this country. I wrote a huge report on it back in 2015. I wrote another book called In Defense of Democracy, because I got really tired of politicians on all sides. And you can see it now with the American election as well. This side is a threat to democracy. No, this side is a threat to democracy. They're all threats to democracy because they're lying. And they rarely do anything they say they're going to do. And they don't even know what democracy is. So I wrote a book explaining what democracy is and defending it, genuinely defending it. At the moment, I ran for UKIP leader as well. Oh, gosh, it is a long story, isn't it? I ran for UKIP leader back in 2017. I basically won, but I didn't. So several people think it was rigged. I don't go down that road. But I would have won if Saint Nigel of Farage hadn't run a deliberate smear campaign against me. So it's been a long, 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 long time. And at the end of that, it's been 20 years, precisely 20 years. And last year, when I realized it was 19 years I'd been doing this, I went into a state of shock. I couldn't believe it had been so long. So it's been 20 years exactly since my very first anti-Sharia speech. And I'll tell you how nervous I was when I did that. I'm very lucky. I've traveled the world. I've spoken in Congress in the US. I haven't been to New Zealand. I've been very lucky. I've had an amazing time in many respects, but we are just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And no amount of standing for election makes any difference. And I'm not alone in that. Several people who feel the same way as me have stood for election. It doesn't work. So at the moment, what I'm doing is I'm trying to get a little bit more on the ground. So I'm just in the process of starting a charity called the Resilience Network, which is for women to get help when they are victims of sexual abuse, sexual assault, rape, or other kinds of violence, because there is no I have known over the years, I've known so many victims of these rape gangs and immigrant rapists, and there's nothing for them. And in the last couple of years, I've tried again. To a young woman came to me, she'd been gang raped by a group of immigrants, and there's just no support. So when I was ringing various different rape crisis centres, and they were actually referring me to each other, which is crazy. So I'd ring one, and so here's an, and I said, but I've just been speaking to them, they sent me to, that sort of thing. It's completely chaotic. And when we eventually secured 6 counselling sessions for this woman, they told her, she was talking about the fact that they were immigrants, and they told her not to talk about that fact, and basically tried to make her sympathize with these immigrants because look at the background they come from. And I mean, this is insanity of the highest order. If you are counseling a woman who has been gang raped, then she is the focus, and only her well-being, and only her well-being should be the focus. To be trying to tell a woman so traumatized to feel sorry for her rapists is another layer of trauma, a message to her that she's nothing. She's meaningless. She was treated like she was nothing when they used her body. Now she's being told she's nothing again because she's not as important as her rapist. Her trauma is nothing compared to her rapist's trauma. It is outrageous beyond all description. So that's what I'm at the moment. I'm getting a charity. I want to be able to link women who have been victims of violence with therapists who are not politically correct losers. I also want to run classes on self-defense, on confidence building, and mind. You know, I meditate a lot. I am ask me about meditation, I'll be here all night. I really love meditation. I think it's a lifesaver, and I want to teach people how to do it. So that's what I'm doing.
That sounds like something definitely worthy to be done, because I know that there's so few of you that have been in this space trying to heed the warnings. The other one that's, you know, got a lot of airplay, particularly in alternative media, is Douglas Murray. And it's funny, you that example you gave in his book, and I think it was The Strange Death of Europe, which was, 2017, he talked about exactly that instance of a Swedish victim of a immigrant rape gang. And she was literally indoctrinated to the point that she was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry I had to put them in that position to rape me. And it's like, how are we getting to this place? I mean, there are enough attacks on women as it is that when you take it back to the most fundamental element of that dynamic between male and female, which is that act of rape, which is just so vile, and it's that, you know, breakdown of permission between the two sexes, and it is almost endemic across the United Kingdom right now. Did you think, because I mean, you're Irish, did you think in all your living years that you would see Catholics marching with orange men in Ireland against this?
Where I say my hair stood on end when I couldn't believe what I was saying. I watched a video of one holding the Irish tricolour, the other holding the Northern Irish flag, standing beside each other. And then as they started to march along, they put arms around each other. I don't think, you know, it's very difficult. Obviously, you have an understanding of it, given that you're so surprised by it. But it's hard to explain to most people outside of this part of the world, these islands, quite how incredible that is. These two communities have been separated for hundreds of years, physically separated. You go to Northern Ireland and you will know whether you're in a Catholic area or a Protestant area because they are marked. They are physically marked. That's how separate they are. One part will have green flags flying, the other part will have they are physically demarcated. They live separate. And Northern Ireland is tiny. I mean, we're not talking about a big place here, but they live completely separately. And for them to be, you know, there's a civil war going on for decades between them. For them to be arms around each other is the most mind-blowing thing I possibly have ever seen in politics. quite possibly have ever seen. And you, it's funny you mentioned that, because just before we came on, I watched a video. Keir Starmer is in Northern Ireland, or was in Northern Ireland, talking about how disgusting they all are. And it's far right and racist. And this is not indicative or representative of the new forward-looking Northern Ireland that we know, because there has been relative peace. And I mean, they still live separately, but the war isn't. They're not killing each other anymore. And he's not complaining about it, saying this is far-right racism and it doesn't represent the new and progressive Northern Ireland. For crying out loud, Catholics and Protestants were walking arm in arm. What?
If that isn't progressive, what is?
How many prime ministers have come and gone and come and gone and not been able to even get the two sides sitting at the same table? And now they're complaining that they're walking arm in arm together for the first time in 500 years because they're far right. It's too much. But that is the most mind-blowing thing. My hair stuck on my, I just couldn't believe what I was saying.
I couldn't believe it either, because my great-grandparents had to immigrate to New Zealand because my great-grandmother was Protestant and great-grandfather was Catholic. So that's the extremes they went to get together. Yeah. Keir Starmer, though, I mean, as a British Prime Minister, to go across to Northern Ireland to say that to them, it's like, dude, read the room. You know, that's never going to go down well in any way. Hasn't for many Prime Ministers. Decades past. I saw his favourability rating is absolutely tanked since he's been in charge. I mean, you know it's bad when he's starting to make Rishi look good.
Oh, God help us. I mean, we all knew that it was going to be bad. See, I was consistent, and I'll say it again now. The Conservatives were better. And we, you know, the Conservatives are awful, but they were a hell of a lot better than this. And I used to give people examples, and I'll give you one as well. Do you remember, you might have heard of some bank closed Nigel Farage's account.
That's right, debanking.
And had all his tweets. His bank was keeping a record of his tweets. I mean, this is where we are. Anyway, they closed his account because of his tweets. So he complained. The government, the Conservative government, stepped in and said to the banks, listen, this is completely outrageous. You can't do this. And they reprimanded the banks. And essentially, the banks are not allowed to do that anymore. If that had been Labour, Labour would have sided with the banks and we'd all have had our accounts closed. You know, it's tiny. These are small things, but they matter. So the Conservatives were much better. But we knew it would be bad, but nobody predicted it would be this bad, this quickly.
So there's obviously a combination of apathy there, because a lot of people didn't come out to vote, which then created this imbalance to the majority. So as some were saying, it was a landslide. Well, no, I mean, when you look at the numbers, it wasn't really. It was just the landslide was as people stayed on their bums at home and didn't go out and vote. One of the things that I wanted to get your thoughts on is just from me, from all the way down here, looking at this, is what I'm seeing working class Brits who are really upset, who are fed up with all of this. And you would have thought traditionally the Labour Party is the party of the working class, especially in Great Britain. So has it now been that the populace, particularly the working class, have realised that there's no such thing as a class war anymore? It's now about culture war, not class.
I think it still is about class. I think if you take the example of Douglas Murray and Tommy Robinson, Tommy Robinson is public enemy number one. They treat him appallingly. I'm not a disciple of Tommy Robinson. I respect him, but I'm not one of his followers. But if Douglas Murray was to say a particular sentence, a controversial one, and Tommy Robinson was to say the same one, they wouldn't be treated the same way because of it. And actually, because Douglas Murray does say a lot of the things that Tommy Robinson says. And he's, you know, he's a high-profile, respected journalist, whereas Tommy Robinson is in and out of prison every 5 minutes. And the difference is class. There's no doubt about it. And if these riots that we've seen in the last few weeks in this country, if this had been middle class or wealthier people protesting, none of this would have happened. But of course, the wealthy people don't protest because it's not in their neighborhoods. They send these immigrants to working class neighborhoods. And that's why the working class are so sick and tired of it, because they're having to live with it. And the girls who are gang raped by these groups, they're all working class girls. These are not doctors and lawyers' children that are being raped. These are working class people's children. And that's why the system doesn't care about them. And that's why the working class people are so tired of this abuse. They're tired. Their neighborhoods are filled with people who've just arrived from God knows where. And no one cares. The system, the state doesn't care. There's no account taken for the safety of the people who are in the areas for where these immigrants are sent. None. And you see the boats coming over every single day. All men. If there's a woman, she will be on the front page of every newspaper, but I guarantee you, every boat that comes in is men from nobody knows where. We don't know who they are, what their past is, what kind of character they are. And people will say things like, oh, but they're really traumatized and they've come from war zones and these people have seen terrible things. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's why we don't want them in the middle of community. You know, we are to a great extent shaped by our upbringing, shaped by what we've seen in the world, the things we've experienced. And when people experience horrors, then it can really, really damage them and make them incredibly dangerous. Now, on a macro scale, do I feel sorry for such people? Yes. Do I want to let them loose in my neighborhood? No, I do not. And the point is that the British government never takes, it's not a factor. If they're sitting down discussing this, the safety of the British working class is not on the list of things to consider. They don't care. They simply don't care. And if people do rebel in any way, I mean, the prison sentences that are being handed down, Labour, when it came in, said it was going to empty some of the prison cells, because there was no room. Weeks later, they're locking up, handing down 1-2 years in prison for Facebook posts. And I'm not exaggerating this. There's a particular woman, she got 18 months for a Facebook post that she deleted. She's 57 years old. She has no criminal record. She made, out of anger, she made a Facebook post. She deleted it even. And she's sitting in jail for 18 months. There are rapists and terrorists. There are like tens of thousands of known Islamists on MI5's watch list. And they're putting a woman in jail for a Facebook post. We are broken. We're so far gone that I don't know if there's any coming back.
Yeah. This is a tipping point, surely, though. I mean, that's the one thing that I will give the Brits, is that there's a stoicism and a sort of a grit there. And I think that's been shown, particularly in the North, with these riots. I do wonder whether or not that instead of pro-Palestinian demonstrations through leafy suburbs of London, that if there were grooming gangs or the like through those Chelsea streets, or someone has their daughter or has been raped or affected by those gangs, that there would be more of a political will, as opposed to, oh, that's a Rotherham problem, or that's a Northern issue, and they don't tend to worry about it. I know Eva Blydenbroek out of the Netherlands, she talks about often this great replacement theory. And one of the hot topics in the media here, and I know I've spoken to it with my cohort now, my offsider, well over a year, is our plummeting birth rate in New Zealand. And that's got a lot of media in the last few weeks, and we're now down to 1.52. Now, that you, having studied Islam, knows that birth rate for them, I think, is sitting somewhere up in the fives and sixes. Is that replacement rate a real issue in the UK? I mean, immigration aside, natural born Islamic-born children, and you've already seen that. It's like a memory hole of, I mean, were they Syrian-born boys that did the Ariana Grande, and then they were the ones with the London attack? So they were local-born. It's almost like those have been, that's been memory-holed. And I mean, it wasn't that long ago, really. I mean, it's been in the last decade. Are people just finally just going, I can't do this anymore. I just can't do this anymore. And are pushing back?
I think so. Oh, well, are they pushing back? Well, the demonstrations recently were, I think they were obviously a pushback, but it's also a sign of desperation to me. Mm. They don't see anything changing for the better. It's just getting worse. And Labour has told us that every neighbourhood in every working class, they don't call it that, but we know, is going to get, they're going to start sending immigrants to far corners of the country where there aren't. My own town, the town I live in, is fairly white, but you can already see that starting to change. We've already had a terror attack. I live in Hartlepool in northeast England. It's pretty much a snow white English town. But you started seeing immigrants arrive. And we've already had a terror attack. Mm. You know, as soon as people started arriving, a 72-year-old man was butchered in the street by someone shouting that it was something, you know, revenge for Gaza or something. So we're already getting less and less safe. Are people pushing back? I don't know. I think Labour at the moment thinks it has crushed that little bit of dissent that we saw. And that's what the prison sentences are for. Mm. You know, there was a guy in Northern Ireland, actually, who was sent away for 2 years in prison for watching the protest. And the judge actually said to him, even curious onlookers are going to see the inside of a jail cell. This was intended to demoralise the people who are trying to push back, intended, and it worked. Mm. I don't think people can't take the risk. They just can't risk.
Has anyone in legacy media gone, oh no, this is just a touch too far? Has anyone called this out? No.
No.
So what about GB News? Have they had a little crack? Usually Andrew Doyle has a...
I'd imagine so. I don't watch GB News. I've literally never watched it. So I'm not going to... Probably unusual, but
I mean, the difficulty, I guess, there is that X has been the place that a lot of people have expressed their views because they knew that, particularly once Elon took over. But as you said, you are now, you who've usually never been backwards and coming forwards, are now self-centering. That is pernicious in an open, free, democratic society.
Yeah, I mean, and they're going, the only social media we've got, I still call it Twitter. The only social media we're allowed to speak on is Twitter. And the British government's going to war with Elon Musk. I don't know if you saw that. He's made a few remarks saying that the civil war in the UK is inevitable and sort of mocking Keir Starmer as Stalin and things like that. And they're hitting back. Now, the police, the chief of London's Metropolitan Police, threatened to extradite Americans. Everyone knew who he was talking about. He's talking about Elon Musk, saying that even Americans cannot avoid our new censorship laws and sort of saying we will track you down wherever you are, even if you're in the US. And it was obviously aimed at Elon Musk. Oh, my God. I mean, we can't completely. They're threatening Elon Musk that they're going to extradite him to the UK to punish him. So we don't even have that. So even if you are allowed to say something on, okay, X, you don't. The platform may let you, but the police are watching. And they have, and Labour is boasting about these new teams of police officers whose job it is to scan social media. That's their job. There are separate sections now created of the police, and their job is to scroll through social media and find things they can prosecute. And Labour's boasting about this. They think this is wonderful. Look what we've done. We've got new policing sections dedicated to social media.
Meanwhile, hundreds of girls are being raped by group
as they're
gangs.
Saying it. Yeah. As they're telling us this, girls are being raped. You know, this is the UK. This is what blows my mind. You know, this country was supposed to be, you know, an Englishman's home is this castle. This was supposed to be this freedom loving. This is all my, you know, it used to love itself, its image as the freedom generator and all these wonderful things that Britain gave to the world, parliamentary democracy and trial by jury and all these. And now look at it. Now look what it's giving the world. What happened? How did it go from that Britain to this Britain? I actually think we're the worst. I mean, the whole Western world is under attack. I think there are levels. So you've got at the top, the worst, most suffering countries are the English-speaking countries, your own included, very much so. Oh,
believe me, we know.
English-speaking countries at the top, then the rest of Europe. And that's it, really. But of the English speaking countries, I think the UK is in the most dire position. And then you have the rest, and then you have continental Europe. There's not much between them, but I think UK is in the worst possible place. I think even Canadians are looking at us aghast at this moment. It's just outrageous, and living in it is genuinely frightening. It is I don't feel free. I don't feel safe. And I'm not the only one. This is a pervasive now. We feel pushed down. You know, there's this heavy state weighing upon us like never before. I feel it. I know people in my life feel it. Yeah, it's very difficult.
Have you, with your look to open the charity, start a charity, have you spoken to Maggie Oliver?
I would love to. Maybe I should try her. The thing is, I'm not sure Maggie Oliver would speak to me. Now, my reputation isn't great.
Well, but come on, if we can have in Ireland them in arm and arm, you never quite know, Anne-Marie.
Well, this is true. This is true. And as I'm sitting here saying this to you, a little voice in my head is saying, let go of all that.
Yeah.
Start afresh. Let go of the past 20 years and start afresh. And this is a problem I have. I think a lot of people have that problem. We have issues with letting go and starting afresh, don't we, us humans? So you're right. You're right. I have to do that. And I will I will contact her.
It's funny when it comes to what has gone on in recent years. I've seen it here because I do a lot of discussions in my show around the whole gender debate and protecting women. Because, I mean, let's face it, from the cultural war perspective, I think they'd much rather we not be around unless you're there to do the housework and the washing. I mean, they'd quite like us there for that, but the rest of it, no, not really. And so there is that sort of that trans, particularly the whole trans agenda. I mean, that's a whole nother massive amount of downward pressure. You just can't touch anything in that space. Even if you, I think I saw with Blake Lively, they're now trawling through her old texts because she said she wouldn't mind having daughters or trannies so she could pass down her shoes and handbags. And they're going, and that's like, that tweet is like forever, or, you know, years and years old. And they're like this, they're like those cops, aren't they? The Instagram and Facebook police on these issues. But it brings together the strangest bedfellows in the sense of, you know, we've got people standing side by side here on that fight, like really diehard feminist lesbians with evangelical Maori preachers fighting the fight. And never in 20 years ago, you would never have seen that. I can tell you that right now, Anne-Marie. So you never know.
It is a funny old thing, isn't it? But we are, I mean, just speaking of women, we are getting it from all sides. I mean, from the right, you're right. And they're becoming, I think the Overton window has shifted a little bit on the right. For misogynistic men on the right, they're now saying things they wouldn't have said a few years ago. Women shouldn't do this and women shouldn't do that. They're very brazen about it. So we've got that on the right. And by the way, I'll make a little prediction for you. If Kamala Harris wins in November, I don't like Donald Trump. I actually probably prefer her over him, frankly. But if she wins in November, and I think that she will, if she wins in November, remember I told you this, right-wing men will start saying women shouldn't be allowed to vote, and they'll be serious. And I'll be interested to see who joins in that chorus. I will be very interested to see. Because I think if she wins, and I think that she will, I think it will be women's vote that does it for her, that gets her over the line. So wait for it. Wait for it. That'll come. But that's on the right. And then on the left, you've got this. They want men with... Do you remember that Los Angeles story? Do you remember that some spa or something in Los Angeles?
Oh, yes, yeah,
the women's spa, and some bloke went in, excuse my language, but with an erect penis in the women's room, and they complained and they threw the women out. You know, this is outrageous. So we've got that on the left, and on the right, we've got this get into the kitchen and make my dinner. Where do we? It's so crazy. So I'm sort of I'm returning a little bit to my old feminist roots, I have to say, and I think that it is needed at the moment. I think women are in trouble.
Yeah,
genuinely, we're in trouble because on the left we've got the trans thing, but also on the left we've got all this defense of Islam and this defense of thousands and thousands and thousands of men coming in, men from countries where women are covered in a black sheet or asking for it. These are the cultures these men grow up in. And then we're bringing them over en masse and chucking them into the middle of English towns. What do they expect to happen? What do they expect? Of course they're going to rape the girls. Of course they are. And no one cares. So we have it from all sides. And like I say, my old school, women's solidarity is coming shooting right back to the surface. I'm pleased with that. And that's what made me pursue this charity. And I'm going to make it work. I really am.
No, well, you need to keep in touch with that and let us know how you get on because, you know, we certainly will. I'd love to hear more about that once you get going. Now, again, if you, people are needing books, Amazon, is that where you find your books, Madal?
Yes.
So we'll make sure that we put those links to those if you want to look up Anne-Marie's books in the show notes.
I'm going to give you a donation page as well for my new charity. It's called the Resilience Network. I would like, if you could, let
totally.
Me know as well. That would be fantastic.
No, of course we can do that. It has been such great news to talk to you and catch up with you again. And so, Knitting Darling, how are we going? We're having a summer break. We're getting back into it. I mean, this with meditation, it is good for your stress. And it is a self-defense tool. Pointy sticks.
I agree. I'll tell you what, I have the wool. I was going to knit, so I was going to challenge myself. I love a V-neck jumper. I do. So you call it jumper in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, we do.
I love a V-neck jumper. So I thought, right, this is going to be my next challenge. I have the wool. I have the pattern. I have the needles. I just haven't started.
And you've got two finer friends. You've got Neil and myself. So.
I know.
No excuse, Anne-Marie. No excuse.
Just a matter of sitting down and prioritising it.
Well, I suggest when you grab your needles, you can get some very good sharp nickel tips. Then they can do double duty. Have those in your handbag. And if you ever get pulled out by the constabulary and you can say, what is this in your handbag? Those are my knitting needles, officer. There you go.
I'd probably still go to jail.
Yeah, they'll realise it's you and it'll be all over Red Rover.
It doesn't matter what you tell them. They'll still jail.
Bless. Oh, well, look, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank
I really
you.
Do appreciate it. This has been Anne-Marie Waters. The Resistance Network is the new charity. That's what we are definitely going to push. That sounds fantastic. And I do appreciate your time. Go well, my friend. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.